Falcoholic Podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live. This is your host, Kevin Knight, reminding you to check out the show live on YouTube on Wednesday nights at 8:10 p.m. Eastern. We also encourage you to check out our Patreon page, where you can unlock exclusive perks, including access to a patron Q&A session where we take Falcons questions for about 30 minutes to an hour. That's a lot of fun. You can find that page at patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy today's episode. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 162 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, joined by a full house of the Falcons family here to discuss what went down this bye week. Not too much, thankfully. And to, of course, preview this Dolphins game coming up in Week 7, where the Falcons will be trying to get back to 500 for the first time since the 2019 season. So, obviously, a lot riding on this game. And it's an opponent that, theoretically, the Falcons should be able to defeat. But we've said that before, so let's just get right into introducing our wonderful cast of co-hosts and guests tonight. First of all, we have with us from the Atlanta Falcons digital media team, we have returning Scott Bear. He is on Twitter, at ScottBearNFL. Scott, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. Just it's been a long time between games. Too long, I think. Yeah. I'm starting to get antsy. No more practice. Let's go play.
Yeah. Well, it's like I keep seeing highlights of like last week's game, and I'm like, wait, was this last week or like 2 weeks? I don't even, because it feels like that's an old game now, but it's actually just the most recent game still. It's just throwing me off, the whole bye week thing. But hope you guys got to enjoy your week off. I think that was an awesome thing that the team did, letting you guys take a break then. I also got to enjoy some time off. So also with us, we have, as well, making his first appearance, also from the Atlanta Falcons digital media team, we have Chris, is it Rim or Reem, Chris?
Rim.
Rim, okay. Chris Rim. Yeah. He's on Twitter, at ChrisRim1. Chris, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Happy to be here, man. Thanks for bringing me on.
Yeah. We've been hoping to get you on for a little while now, so happy you were able to make it. Also with us, we have, joining us from the Falcoholic Podcast crew, we have David Walker, a.k.a. Falcoholic DW on the Twitters. DW, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. I want to plug the Final Whistle podcast while I'm here.
Just going to break that one before. David. That's early. You're not supposed to go in, you know, before 5 minutes. Yeah.
My mistake.
Yeah.
It's good to be here, Kevin.
Yeah. Thanks for that, DW. Thanks. Just get us right off the rails early now. Also with us, we have Adnan Ikic. He's at Say Which Way on the Twitters. Adnan, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very nervous about this Braves game going on.
Yeah, understandable.
But, you know, distracting myself with some Falcons talk, of course.
That's good. That's very healthy, very healthy. And you've got your Twizzler, so we got the Twizzler plug going. Excellent of you on there. Got to keep up our corpo ties.
They need to send me more material. They need to send me more material since I keep doing this.
They do.
Are you still working on that?
I gave most of it away, to be honest. Okay. All right.
They sent you like 2 years worth of Twizzlers, so I mean, that's right. Literally like, I don't know how I could eat. I couldn't even eat that many Twizzlers. All right. Finally, last but not least, you've seen him already. He is Eric Robinson at _Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, man. It feels good to finally talk some Falcons football, and you know, I'm kind of looking forward to this game. They might be able to pull this one off.
Yeah,
I guarantee that we win.
Thanks, Adnan. So we know who to blame now.
We have not been specific.
Yep. Well, you see, if we win this game and then we win next week to get to a winning record, Adnan will be starting the Super Bowl chant.
Not Super Bowl. Maybe wild card.
Okay. Well, yeah, we gotta ease into it. Like, it'll be wild card. Then they'll beat the Saints. Then it'll be Super Bowl. You know, it'll be divisional round win. You know, then they'll win against the Patriots. Then it'll be okay, Super Bowl or bust. So we're just waiting on that from Adnan. But you know, if we win all the way up to the Patriots game, I think we'll all be pretty excited at that point. But yeah, obviously we got a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. So this week we did get, let's start off with the big news, obviously, of Calvin Ridley returning to the team. Obviously, that's a major step for this offense. He's their number one receiver, one of the most potent weapons, if not the most potent, on the team. His absence was certainly felt last week. Well, you know, 2 weeks ago now, technically, with the bye week. But Calvin Ridley being back is awesome. Obviously, we all hope that he was able to take the time that he needed to get away and deal with, you know, whatever personal things he needed to. And we're happy to see him back. But yeah, I will open the floor up first to Scott. What is Ridley returning? How do you feel about that? I mean, obviously the offense has been starting to get into a groove. They were able to do it a little bit without him, even now getting him back. I mean, that could be big.
Yeah, I think it's not even just getting Calvin back. It's having Russell Gage not even listed on the participation report. And you look at what Kyle Pitts was able to do in the Jets game without those two. And the fact that just throw it in his proximity. That's kind of where we're getting now. So when you have the Falcons skill players at full strength, I think that could make for some exciting football for a team that scored 57 points over the course of the last 2 weeks. I know opposition, this and that, but you're going up against 1-5 teams. So I'm excited to see how this offense can kickstart itself and see where it can go after a week of self-start, building on some positive momentum. They're doing well in the red zone. They're moving the ball downfield. They're taking the ball in chunks. Still some obvious areas. But I think that there's cause for optimism. Let's call it that.
For optimism. Yeah, it's a good time to have these guys coming back. And you mentioned Russell Gage as well. Chris, I want to go to you on this one. I mean, getting these two weapons back, do you think that's going to be a big step for this offense that was already starting to get their legs under them now in Arthur Smith's system?
Yeah, for sure. I think as the season has progressed, we've seen everyone kind of get more comfortable in Arthur Smith's system. Like the last three games, Matt Ryan has been playing a lot better than he played in the, you know, in the first two, and the offensive line has adjusted, you know, for Mayfield, and, you know, getting guys back also, you know, with Andrews. So I think, yeah, for sure with Ridley and Gage back, I think this offense will be like I think most people expected at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. And I think the big things that we were expecting with Arthur Smith coming in were sort of his hallmarks in Tennessee. And he's absolutely, even though, you know, they went 0% in the red zone in week one, despite that start, there's only two attempts, not that many attempts, but they're now at a really good clip in the red zone. I believe they're I can't remember the exact number, but they're definitely in the upper echelons of the league in the red zone efficiency, despite the poor start. So I can only imagine that getting back two of your biggest offensive weapons in Gage and Ridley are going to make a big difference there. DW, I'll go to you on this one. You know, what are your thoughts on sort of where the offense is now? You know, taking into account these guys coming back, obviously, but we saw it struggle out of the gate, which not, you know, terribly unexpected considering new system and new pieces and all that. But how are you feeling now going into week seven about the state of the offense?
Yeah, look, I'm really optimistic. You know, I tweeted out after the win against the Jets. This is the first time Matt Ryan has had two games, according to PFF, so take it with a grain of salt by their scoring system. But it's the first time he's had two games of 90-plus grades since 2017. So he never did it twice in the season under Dirk Cutter. And he's done it 2 weeks in a row in this system. And it's a lot of what we thought, that, you know, this is going to tailor a lot more to Ryan's strengths. And now he's getting back two of his best weapons from the year before. I don't know how the Dolphins look at what's coming and seeing the emergence of Cordarrelle Patterson, Kyle Pitts finally getting into gear, Russell Gage, Calvin Ridley, and this offensive line not allowing a single sack against the Jets team that came into that game tied for third with 13 sacks on the season. Everything seems to be hitting at the right time, and the Falcons come in well-rested and face the Dolphins team that is coming home from London. This one is really, I think for the first time, it feels like it's really stacked in Atlanta's favor, and it's hard not to be optimistic.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there's a lot of nice things going in Atlanta's favor here, which makes me very nervous. Yes. Too much is going in Atlanta's favor, perhaps. But some other notes just from the first official practice report. We did have Caleb McGarry placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, so his status is in doubt for Sunday. We did know, you know, that the Falcons were 100% vaccinated, so McGarry being vaccinated means that he has a chance to play, but you know, it would require negative tests and things of that sort. And we can't, you know, we just don't know what will happen there. Obviously, we hope that he's okay, that he's healthy and everything's good there. and that he can come back soon. But we also saw, like, Eric Harris probably making his return. Avery Williams limited today. We had just a couple of guys that were out of practice today. So we're not missing a ton of guys. You know, obviously Dante Fowler not practicing is a little bit concerning. Jalen Hawkins had a great game. Last time where he snagged that great interception. But Adnan, I'll go to you here. Any of those other injuries that you're sort of monitoring going into this Dolphins game?
When it comes to the Atlanta Falcons, it's, as mentioned earlier by Scott, it's great that Russell Gage is not even on the injury report. It's great that Calvin Ridley is going to be back. I'm curious about Jalen Hawkins. From Miami's side, I'm looking at their injury report right now. Also, Dante Fowler missed today's practice. But from Miami's side, there's like an entire laundry list of of limited practices. I just pulled up their injury report. They didn't have anyone who missed practice, but there's definitely some guys, Byron Jones, Xavier Howard. They're two stud cornerbacks who missed last week's game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the lack of their presence was felt with Trevor Lawrence out in London and them losing that game. Devontae Parker has a hamstring injury, which it's always iffy when it comes to wide receivers. He's missed the past couple games. Will Fuller's already on IR. So, like you said, the Falcons have a lot riding in their favor. Yeah, even these guys, even if they play, I don't know if they'd even be at 100%. But yeah, it's definitely something to monitor in the next couple days to see if any of these limited practices end up going into DNPs, because as we know, if a player goes from limited to did not practice on Thursday or Friday, then it looks rather bleak about whether or not they're going to play. They end up either on the wrong side of questionable, doubtful, or even completely out before Friday's injury report even comes out. So I'll definitely be curious in the next couple days.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to get to more of the Dolphins stuff in a little bit, including, you know, obviously we'll have to touch on the rumors that Tua Tagovailoa might be leaving the Dolphins. Seems like that was sort of shut down a little bit later tonight, but obviously we'll have to talk about it a little bit at some point. But as Adnan mentioned, you know, both the Dolphins starting corners, Byron Jones, Xavier Howard, limited. Both quarterbacks limited, Tua with the ribs and Jacoby Brissett with the hamstring. We have Austin Jackson with the shoulder, you know, defensive tackle John Jackson with the knees. Linebacker Jalen Phillips, their top draft pick, great edge rusher. You know, he's also limited, so there's a lot of questions there. You never really know with limited. Sometimes it's really just sort of a maintenance day. Sometimes it, like Adnan said, can lead to a DNP. Eric, I'll go to you now. How are you feeling? So obviously the Falcons are in a better shape in terms of health. You know, we haven't talked about another guy like Marlon Davidson is apparently going to be back for this one as well. But how are you feeling about how these two teams look in terms of health going into week 7?
Well, you know, excuse me. Obviously the Falcons look the more healthy of the two teams right now. And you know, it is a good sign, especially on the offensive side of the ball, getting those names back like Ridley and Gage and Scott brought up a great point. It was very welcoming to see how the offense performed without those two guys in London. And you know, if you take away the turnovers there, like they were pretty close to putting up 40 points in that game if they were not able to put up 40 points. But I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see how this team performs with a reasonable bill of health. I'm not going to say a good one because, you know, a couple of names that were sitting out today were important names. But yeah, it's good to see them on the right side of health at this point in time. So, you know, they entered the bye week on a win, build up some optimism a little bit, you know, a couple of losses in the division. Well, the Panthers losing in the division kind of helped them out a little bit. So again, it may have raised a few eyebrows and raise some optimism in the locker room. So,
Eric's already looking at a potential division title. I like.
I'm not looking.
That's your lane. That's your lane, Adnan.
I just know how guys. They look at it a certain way. They got to win. They see a division opponent that has a loss, and now they're, what, half a game behind? So, I mean, it drives up the intrigue a little bit more now. So
it does. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is one of those classic situations where it looks like the Falcons should be sort of in the driver's seat for this game. You know, I think you guys have mentioned, like, the Falcons are getting healthier. They're coming off a bye. The Dolphins sort of have everything stacked against them. You know, they just lost, what was it, their fourth straight game, something like that. You know, kind of a heartbreaker to the Jaguars, who are, you know, themselves arguably one of the worst teams in football. And they're coming off that London game, and they don't get a bye, which is also weird. So it's really tough for the Dolphins in this one. But this is sort of a classic example of where the old Falcons would have found a way to lose it. And I think that's making a lot of seasoned veteran fans very nervous. But Scott, I'll go to you here. You know, how are you feeling about this game, considering, you know, I don't think you've been bludgeoned to death by the Falcons just yet. So, you know, as a neutral observer, we'll say, you know, how are you feeling about this game?
Yeah, I definitely don't have the sense of imminent dread, like I'm always being chased by a predator that's faster than me. That's definitely not how I feel.
That's such a great way of describing yes. being an Atlanta sports fan.
That's not how I feel to this point. Kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. But anyway, I did hop on the information superhighway and I took a look at what the internet had to say about red zone efficiency. And I know that's a sticking point for Falcons fans who have been bludgeoned with poor red zone performance.
Yes.
They're eighth at almost 70%. Last three games, 80% touchdown clip. Miami 23rd. That's normally in, I guess, Falcons territory. Yeah. And I think that those are good things. And I fully understand that it's going to take a while for the reputation and what has happened so much, the troubles of the past to be washed away. That you need some positive experiences and some different before you can truly get optimistic about this one. But here, okay, so I said all that optimistic stuff right now.
Here's the turn. Yes,
you know the Dolphins are looking at this as a get right game too, right? That even though they're in trouble, like they're seeing Falcons team, you know, not quite established yet, working out some things. We can get right here, right? That we can turn things around. That's why I think that, look, they are 1-5. They're struggling. That was a great point, that how long their injury list is coming off. There's a lot of things working against them right now. At the same time, right, they are playing at home, and I just think that they could look at this as a way to get right. And the one thing that we haven't seen from the Falcons, we've seen really good sequences and series of play. We have not seen the type of put your, you know, foot on the neck type of a situation. Yeah. Or that's a terrible analogy, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Terrible. I'm really sorry about that. What I'm trying to say is where they really come out and, like, you know, dominate. That they could have done that against the Jets, right? Hayden Hurst fumbles. Now we're in a different scenario. Yeah. Nonetheless, they need to come out and do that, right? That this is a team that could be excited, could really look at this as a get right game. You can eliminate that hope in the second quarter if you play this game right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, that's fine. And I think, what is it, the Around the NFL podcast, you know, they like to talk about the wounded animal game or whatever. Now, usually that comes when you're 0-2. The Dolphins have lost five straight, so they're kind of a little bit past the wounded animal game at this point. But it's the same principle. Like, this is a team that, you know, is probably feeling a little bit down and out, but they're looking to rebound. And, you know, nobody in the NFL just packs it in and heads home. Like, that's just not a thing.
I think the last time we saw the Falcons actually apply that type of pressure to a team that they were better than was probably the season finale of the 2016 season, where they had the Saints, under 500 Saints team, and they pretty much took them to the woodshed. And again, that's another fair point that Scott brings up, because if you're just looking at depth charts and talent, this is a much more talented team than the Jets.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, is this a situation where, you know, the Falcons can look at a 1-5 team and say, hey, we're better than them. Let's go ahead and put them out of their misery. I'm not sure, because, again, they couldn't really do that against the Jets. And now they have a much more talented opponent here, in my opinion, that is playing for a lot right now. I mean, their coach is on the hot seat. There's some trade rumors that are floating in the air around the team now. So they're playing for something too right now.
And remember, the Dolphins won 10 games last year.
They did.
This was a really, really good team. And up until that season finale where they lost to Buffalo, they were right in that playoff hunt. And, yeah, like Eric said, this team is much better than the Jets. Not a huge believer in Tua, but he's much better than Zach Wilson is at this stage in their respective careers. But, man, I just can't get over the fact that they really had to travel to London, and now they have to play immediately after that.
Yeah.
And not only did they have to travel to London, that was a massive letdown to lose to the Jaguars at the last second like that. A game that they were probably banking on winning the same way that the Falcons were banking on beating the Jets, and, you know, to kind of get back on track a little bit, and it just didn't happen. That was Jacksonville's first win of the season.
I don't think we've seen that before, where a team goes to London and doesn't have a bye week. Like, that's significant. It really is.
And when's the last time there was, like, a scheduling quirk that worked out in the Falcons' favor, too?
Those have been rare this year, that's for sure, considering that the Falcons, you know, technically only got 7 home games because, you know, London's kind of a neutral field situation, and they already had, you know, 8 technical home games and versus 9 away because it's an uneven number of games this year. So it's nice to get maybe a break here. You know, luckily the Falcons did win the London game at the neutral site, but...
Oh, it's technically our first home win of the season. It's registered.
There you go.
But it is very, very dangerous to go out there with the mentality. And I'm talking about the players. I'm going to have this mentality all week. But that mentality of, oh, yeah, we're going to go out there and we're going to slaughter them. Because remember the last time the Falcons were coming off a bye and playing the Miami Dolphins, it was the 2017 season.
Oh, my gosh.
Where I think their strength and conditioning coach got caught snorting coke or something.
Yes.
The game.
The cocaine game, yeah.
The Falcons were coming off a bye, and the Dolphins, like, came back from down 17-0 to win in overtime. So, it's always dangerous to get ahead of yourselves.
Did we kick our feet up before that game.
Oh, man, that was a mistake.
We felt good going into that one. Like, man, they're going to get this. This is going to be.
Oh, yeah. No, we got this. We got this for sure. Yeah. What a mistake. Yep. Yeah. No, that's what Solero was saying with his donation. Thank you, Solero. He said, last time the Falcons looked like they were going to do good against the Dolphins. Don't forget, they had Jay Cutler, Adam Gase, and the coach that was doing coke in the facility. And we still lost after that 17-0 lead.
So 17-0, man.
Yep. Yeah. Hopefully we won't have to deal with that again. Also, we have Ray Moon chiming in with the $5. Ray, thank you so much, man. He says he's confident. He says Matt Ryan will turn the Dolphins to blubber. So Ray is expressing the positivity here. So thank you, Ray, for bringing that. But yeah, Chris, I know you're not necessarily a scarred Falcons fan either. So how are you sort of feeling going into this matchup about how this looks, at least from your perspective?
Well, I mean, I think for a lot of the reasons, I kind of agree with, I don't know who said it, but I think that the Dolphins are looking at this game exactly how the Falcons are looking at this game. I think the Dolphins are thinking, we should win this game. And they're also angry. You know, that's a long flight back to London after losing to Urban Meyer and the Jaguars.
Yeah.
in the way they lost. So I think I wouldn't underestimate, you know, an angry team who should have a bye week, who took a long, angry flight back from London, who want to really come to, who really want, who you're going to, and they really want to, you know, kick your behind. You know, this is I would be angry, you know, if I was this team. And I think that's going to fuel them this week. I think if Xavier Howard and, you know, Byron Jones, they were limited. Devontae Parker was limited. If they are back, you know, it's not the same team. I think, Not saying I don't think the Falcons are going to win. I just think this is kind of, I don't want to use the phrase like a trap game or something like that, but it's like one of those games where you think, you know, it might be a walk in the park,
right. But
you know, I really wouldn't underestimate this Dolphins team, a frustrated Dolphins team, really in need of a win. Like they said, they won 10 games last year. This would drop them to 1-6. You know, people might be getting fired if that happens. Yeah. So they need this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And like, I like what you said there. Both of these teams are going into this game like, oh yeah, this other team is bad. Like, we should beat them. And like, the Falcons have definitely looked better as of late, but they're still just 2-3. You know, this is not like the Falcons aren't exactly a juggernaut going into this game or anything like that. So, you know, this is not a time to be overconfident, to sort of start feeling yourself saying like, oh yeah, we're going to win this game for sure. And to be frank, I don't think that they're feeling that way. I mean, I think everyone in that building knows they're 2-3, you know, they got a long way to go to being considered a good football team. So, I agree basically with everything you said. I like how you phrased it. It worries me because, you know, under Dan Quinn, this is the type of game that they would lose. Because I don't know what it was with Dan Quinn, but coming off a bye,
they lost just, literally exactly this game under Dan.
Literally this exact game, yeah. And it,
Dark Falcons fan strikes again, man. He's already going back to the past.
Yep, I can't leave the past. I'm trapped by my own shadow. But you know, I think this is honestly a good opportunity for Arthur Smith to show how he's different. You know, I think if he does secure this game, and you know, even better if he's able to sort of win convincingly, you know, that would definitely go a long way to sort of quieting Falcons fans' fears that, you know, we're just gonna live the same life under Smith, and you know, we can't really draw any conclusions from five games. But you know, so, I like where the team is trending, to say the least. But go ahead.
I don't, the Dolphins, you know, again, looking at the record, you can look at them and say, yeah, they're 1-5, but for their losses have been by a combined 17 points. So they were, I mean, they're literally a play or two away from beating the Raiders in overtime. You know, they lost, I believe they lost to the Patriots by a point.
They beat the Patriots.
They did. They beat the Patriots. I'm sorry. Who did they lose to by a point then? Let me look at it real quick. I'm sorry.
They lost to the Jags by 3, the Raiders
lost
by
3. Lost to the Jags
by
3, right. Yeah. And they lost to the Colts by 10. So, again, they were still a couple plays away from having that record, you know, flipped. And Chris pointed it out very well. He put it very, very, very openly there. Like, that, this is a team that is on paper. They're good, talented. They're talented. They know that they're only a few plays away from having a much better record than 1-5. And you know, it's kind of sort of easy to look at them and say like, yeah, they're you know, a wounded duck right now. But you never know, man. They might be a beehive. I'm pretty sure there was a lot of stuff being said on that plane on the way back. And now you got to talk about these trade rumors for the next couple of days, which you probably don't want to talk about. You want to just get on the field and play some football. So yeah, they might have a little angry opponent this Sunday.
Yeah,
I think also before we, Kev, I just put one. In the London game, Tua also played one of his best games, one of his best games, arguably in his career, passing wise, with just passing the tight ends. Like, he's throwing to Mac Hollins and Gesicki and someone else who I'd never heard of. So I think, you know, he's also coming off a good game.
Gesicki's, I agree.
Gesicki scares me.
And they're finally with Tua starting to actually utilize Jalen Waddle. He was just being completely wasted with Brissett, because Jacoby Brissett just would not throw the ball downfield. And, you know, we've seen it. Waddle's two best games this season have both come with Tua under center. Last game, he had a couple touchdowns, season high 70 yards. They're really, really utilizing him around the red zone, around the end zone. They're scheming him open, and you know, why wouldn't they? This is after all the number 6 overall pick. They're looking at Jalen Waddle with the same optimism that we have with Kyle Pitts, as, you know, a potential, you know, savior of this team when it comes to skill position weapons and a future number one wide receiver for them. So you know, that matchup with Waddle is going to be really interesting for the Falcons. I'm curious to see how our slot guys do against him, because, you know, they're not just going to completely line him up out wide to go up against AJ Terrell. They're going to be moving him around all over the pocket. I think there was a play last week where they had him. I know definitely his first touchdown of the season, he was in the backfield, and off a play action, he leaked out to the left against the Patriots for his first touchdown of his career. So they're really going to put him all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me get to some more donations here before we continue the conversation. So George Costanza has a game prediction for us. George with the $5. Thank you so much, George. He says, All right, he's got ATL 37, Miami 17. I think this is the game we finally hit on all cylinders on offense, and Miami continues being Miami's. Also, he says, let's go Braves, and he wants to know what you're drinking tonight, Adnan.
I'm sorry, Joe. I don't have anything new. It's the same orange drink as before. I'm just
really, we should get that orange drink to sponsor you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they know about the show or who we are, given that they're in Eastern Europe. But yeah, it's really good, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, well, that could be a great opportunity for them to expand their market, you know, over here to the States, get it going.
Just got to know, are we splitting these tips six ways? Is that how that's happening? Are we going out at the end?
Excuse me, sorry, the show's over.
It's actually Dave Chode who takes all of the tips.
Dave says that we can't run this. If he wasn't behind the controls, we couldn't do anything. So, you know, Dave just takes all of our tips, like the overbearing manager. So, Dave is very good.
He already took our food from us.
Yep. So. He put me in that broom closet when I was at training camp, so made me stay in the boiler room. Yeah. I think that's a very ambitious prediction, George. I hope it comes true. I like how this game is lining up. I'm just surprised, honestly, because we talked about it. We mentioned it earlier, but the Dolphins were a 10-win team last year, and their defense was one of the best in the league. This year, not the case. I wonder. I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is wrong with this Dolphins team. Obviously, you lose your starting quarterback. That makes a big difference. But, like, with the defense in particular, yeah.
It was definitely a combination of injuries and, you know, just the coaching inability, which is why a guy like Brian Flores is considered to be, you know, coaching for his job at this point, to be honest with you. It kind of plays a part in why you see a team like them that's so bogged down in these trade rumors that I keep mentioning. If you haven't paid attention, but there is a rumor that they may be on the verge of making a trade for Deshaun Watson. So, you know, a team that is, you know, has talent across the board, yet they're still kind of wrapped around this type of trade room. It just goes to show where they are as a franchise, where they are as a team, like they to the point where they need to possibly pull a trigger like this to get things going. So.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say just I haven't seen a lot of the Dolphins, but I watched the game last week, obviously because we were off, but in last week's game, the thing that stood out to me most was Brian Flores blew through two challenges in 1 minute.
1 minute.
Wow. Of things that were obviously not – they were not going to win. Like, I don't know where the intel – like, they have someone telling them in their ear or advising him to challenge it. Maybe he just went against that. And because just from that moment, I think that kind of decision, I'm not sure if that's indicative of how he's been the entire year, but that was just an example to me of, you know, how he kind of, you know, steered them in the wrong direction, at least last week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an important thing to consider, like the coaching angle. I know someone else was had something to get to as well. So whoever that was, I can't remember.
I think that also ties in with his mismanagement last year of the quarterback position, which is kind of sort of what, you know, prevent it from either guy getting a rhythm. So yeah, Chris, the whole his management of everything has definitely been questioned a lot over the past couple of years.
And even going beyond Brian Flores, just on the field, their offensive line has struggled. Jesse Davis, Liam Eichenberg, and Austin Jackson are three guys all with very poor PFF pass blocking grades. Eichenberg and Jackson, they have sub 40 pass blocking grades according to PFF. Eichenberg's given up 4 sacks this year. Jesse Davis, and these are their two tackles, by the way, has given up 2 sacks. They've given up a number of quarterback hurries, quarterback hits. Their center rotation of Michael Dieter and Greg Mance has been solid, but man, their tackles have just been getting work this season. And their run game has pretty much been non-existent. I have no idea where Myles Gaskin went. They are not utilizing him at all.
Yeah, he killed us in the preseason, man. He was blasted this defense.
Yeah, and it's like they really, really like Malcolm Brown. And it's the same thing with the Rams last year. Yeah. I don't know what this infatuation is with Malcolm Brown. And, you know, Malcolm Brown is a fine running back. It's probably his really, really great pass blocking, which coaches love. But, man... teams just do not give their best players their best run. They're outsmarting themselves with this. It's the same thing with the Rams, who with Sean McVay, who was not giving Cam Akers carries last year because he wanted to get Malcolm Brown involved. Same thing with the Dolphins this year. They need to start letting Myles Gaskin start letting him get loose, and instead they put him into this committee with Savon Ahmed and Malcolm Brown, which is really one of the weakest committees in the NFL, and it's turned this running game into maybe the worst running game in the NFL right now.
Yeah, it's really quite rough. There's no question about that. I want to get to DW here because I haven't heard his dulcet tones in a moment. But DW, you know, speaking of the poor offensive line of Miami, the Falcons, you know, Dante Fowler are not practicing thus far this week. Is this a matchup the Falcons can take advantage of here, possibly getting pressure on the Dolphins?
I mean, possibly. This looks a lot like the New York Giants game did, and it's all about matchups. You know, it's about where your best players match up with their guys. And I would still take Grady Jarrett over most offensive guards in this league, outside of, you know, a select handful, including one that plays for the Falcons. And I look at the guards for the Dolphins, and I think that is a matchup that favors the Falcons.
High
and,
praise for Jalen Mayfield, by the way.
Yeah. So, it's about the matchups. Even if Fowler is out, and hopefully that's not the case. It all starts with Grady. And let's be honest, Grady has not even been at his best this year. We know he's actually capable of even more than what he's done. Like, he's been good. But Grady, when he hits on all cylinders, is one of the best interior pass rushers in the league. And I think that is going to be where, if they're going to shut down the Dolphins offense, which incidentally has only scored more than 21 points once this year. So that's something to keep in mind. You know, we're talking about everything they've done, and they've struggled on offense. If they're going to get to Tua and shut down this offense, I think it starts with Grady. It's going to start in the middle of that offensive line. And I think I like that matchup. And that's what I'm keying in on, because if we start to give this quarterback a lot of time in the pocket, I think, you know, it's going to be a long afternoon for our secondary.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, they have to get some kind of pressure, but it's like, I think, you know, it gets a little dicey because with guys like Tua that are mobile, you know, they can evade the pressure. And we saw the Falcons really struggle with that against the Eagles in particular. But they also have a really poor offensive line. So this is like the sort of matchup with a young, inexperienced offensive line where you think that the blitzes from DMPs can really have some effectiveness, but it's dangerous against a mobile quarterback to send too many guys. So we'll have to see how they tackle that. Yeah,
that's why that pressure up the middle is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're coming off the edge and that guy can scramble to the other edge, and this is what happened with the Eagles. We weren't pressuring up the middle. We were getting around the edge, but he was able to get outside the pocket. But if you can bring it up the middle, I don't care how quick that quarterback is, when he's got that pressure immediately in his face, as opposed to coming from one side or the other, that is very difficult, even for the most athletic quarterbacks to overcome. And I think, again, that's why I just keep keying in on, you know, what does the interior of that offensive line look like for the Dolphins? And they've got some weaknesses, and I'm sure Dean Pease sees that. If I'm the Falcons, I'm going to use stunts and twists to try to disrupt the inside of that offensive line. I'm going to send some, you know, another guy to watch, Deion Jones. I would look at what you're going to do as far as, you know, A-gap blitzes to try to, take advantage of that situation. So, yeah, for me, it's disrupt up the middle, and you're going to have a really good chance of limiting the Dolphins.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let me get to a couple more donations here. Thank you guys again for those. We really appreciate that. So from Brandon Brass, with the $3. Yeah, just, you know, printing that money. You know, this is the big bucks here. Brandon Brass with the $3. He says, so last time we saw Ridley, we saw him drop a few throws. Are we sure he's a wide receiver one? Do you think he needs more practice? I mean, I think the whole, like, is he a wide receiver one thing is, like, a little bit of a silly debate, because he kind of, like, is the wide receiver one. But also with this team, it's like, does it really matter who's, like, the quote-unquote wide receiver one? Because this, I feel like this is more of, like, a spread it around 2016 style Falcons, as opposed to, like, Julio Jones is catching 200 targets sort of 2015 Falcons offense. And I think that's healthier as an offense as a whole. But you know, I do think Ridley, you know, needs to be a little bit more reliable with the hands. And, you know, I think we'd all certainly like him to turn up field with some of these catches a little bit sooner. But yeah, I mean, he's really auditioning for an extension here. So it's kind of on him to get back to his previous high levels of play and really demonstrate that he needs.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that question, I think what people are actually asking is Calvin Ridley the next Julio Jones? And I feel like that's so unfair. And that is, it's, you know, Julio was amazing. He's not here anymore. For those of you who are still crying about it, I'm sorry. We can't fix that. But you don't have to be a Julio Jones to be a top wide receiver in this league. And yeah. I think that is where that question is geared. And at least in my opinion, and I think Calvin knows he can clean up some stuff and clean up the drops, but I don't think there's any question that he has the talent to be a top receiver in this league.
My follow-up question, DW, is Kyle Pitts the next Julio Jones?
Kyle Pitts is the next Calvin Johnson.
Yes.
To the right.
Go.
I take that.
I'm still grieving a little bit over Julio, DW. So thank
we
you
all
for
yeah.
reopening
that wound. Well, and I had
you
to
need
watch
a hug?
Monday Night Football.
Do you need a hug, buddy?
Yeah. I do.
big sad, but yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the future is bright for this offense, and I'd like Calvin Ridley to be a part of it, but with the financial situation the team's in, among other things, you know, we'll have to see. I think he knows that too. So
at this point, to be quite honest with you, because of how everything played out, I'm more concerned about his mental state. He's here physically, but is he here mentally? Is he back on the team mentally? That's what I really care. You know, the drops and the catches and all that type of stuff and his role in offense, that'll play itself out. But is he back? Is his head, you know, back in the game here? And is he ready to focus? Because this team, with his ability, this offense, you know, it can definitely be a very, very solid one, a very formidable one, if he's able to be back to his normal self. So that's what I'm more concerned about. The drops or whatever, like I said, that'll work itself out at some point.
Yeah, exactly. I think the drops are kind of a random thing. I mean, we see that you know, there are some certainly receivers that are drop prone, but Ridley's not really one. So I don't think that's gonna be a long term.
It was a red flag for him coming out of Alabama, and it wasn't something that you saw. It wasn't a reoccurring thing, you know, at the beginning stages of his career in Atlanta. It wasn't an issue until really this year, honestly. It wasn't something that showed itself very frequently. So that's why it really came as a surprise to a lot. Like, man, really, he's dropping some things that we've seen him catch with his eyes closed.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope that he was able to take the time away that he needed to get his head right. You know, and I think mental health is really important. And, you know, I hope that taking that time away was able to help him, and that it's, I think, ultimately the best thing for everyone going forward, you know, and I appreciate the team sort of giving him the ability to do that. And I think, you know, I think we will see lots of good things from Ridley over the remainder of the year, and hopefully starting this week once again. George stands with $3 complaining about his 1-5 record in our patron fantasy league. That's a big ouch there, George. He's starting Zach Wilson as his quarterback in fantasy now.
God, George.
Yeah,
that's why you're 1-5.
Yeah. Well, it's a 2 QB league, right?
I promise you there's a better option out there, even if it is QB.
Meanwhile, while we're on
Davis Mills, QB. Yeah.
Meanwhile, while we're on the topic, I am 4-2 in that same
league. Oh, yes. Well, I think I lost a game in that league by like 0.04. Then I just raged and then I stopped caring. No, I'm just kidding. I do care. But, you know, it's rough. It's rough out there on those fantasy streets. A lot of players on IR right now, especially if you took Christian McCaffrey. So thank you.
So I got to take Derrick Henry in the first round.
Right. Thank you, guys. That has been our fantasy minute. Yes. Our fantasy minute where we check in on all things fantasy. Moving forward, Corey Carter with the $5. He says, all right. So this is a defensive game plan question about the game. He says, so do you think we put a spy on Tua And how do you think we defend Gesicki? Trying to get through this without hearing the Braves score. Yes. All right, Corey. Yeah, those are great questions. I will open the floor to anyone that wants to take those on. I mean,
I don't know that you have to spy Gesicki Tua.
Yeah. Necessarily, but
he's not exactly Jalen Hurts.
Yeah,
he's not, like, and it still depends. A lot of it still depends as well as far as his health. You know, he's still nursing some tender ribs there, and I'm pretty sure the team is not necessarily drawing up, you know, run plays for him at this point. So maybe you may not need to necessarily spy him, but you definitely need to be a little more disciplined as a unit with a guy like Tua on the field. As far as Gesicki goes, the guy's a mismatch, man. He's 6'6" with a great wingspan, and he finds ways to get open. He's not going to win foot races, but he's a very crafty route runner for a guy his size. And again, you just throw it in his area and he's able to come down with it. Has great hands, but I'm not sure if anyone on the Falcons have that type of difference maker that can match up with Gesicki one-on-one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, you think in theory, you know, someone like Deion Jones could be a good matchup on him because of his speed, but, you know, Gesicki would have the size advantage there.
Just the size and strength is gonna win out on a number of occasions in a matchup like that. So
yeah, that's a tough one. But yeah, I guess for me, I wouldn't probably spy Tua because he's not really the type of guy that just takes off and runs all the time, like someone like Jalen Hurts, to where it's really necessary. But, you know, I probably play more zone to make sure that you limit the scrambling. But
depending on where he's lined up, because Miami does move him around a lot. This may be a situation, I'm pretty sure DMP's probably thought about this, as far as possibly chipping Gesicki off the line a few times just to kind of slow him down, just to prevent him from getting into his route. And that, you know, somewhat takes away a read from Tua. So we'll see how it goes. That's one way to kind of sort of end up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's certainly worth mentioning that the Falcons on defense are actually, you know, if you don't look at the points allowed, and I think the points allowed is, you know, a little bit rough for the Falcons because obviously they allowed two pick sixes and a kick return touchdown. So that it's a little bit inflated, but if you look at their yardage allowed, they're 13th right now in total yardage allowed on defense. They are currently, what is it, in passing, 14th in passing, 244 yards a game. And in rushing, they're right about in that same, 12th in rushing yardage, 108 yards a game allowed. So obviously that game against the Jets helps things, but, you know, they are not the sort of league worst passing defense that we saw last year. And they are certainly capable of sort of holding their own and getting some key stops, which is nice to see. And that was sort of what I was looking for from Dean Pease. This is a man who's never really coordinated a bad defense. And I didn't think, even with the you know, talent level on Atlanta's defense not necessarily being the greatest in the league, I still figured he'd put a competent unit on the field. And I think that's what we're seeing. And that's very encouraging to me. But you know, you mentioned it, Eric, a couple of people mentioned it too. The Dolphins are really struggling on offense. So this could provide a good matchup in terms of just sort of the defense having a good game. And the Dolphins on defense haven't been anywhere near as good as we were expecting, as we mentioned earlier in the game. I mean, the Dolphins right now, the Falcons are allowing 29.6 points per game, and that's 31st in the league. The Dolphins are allowing 29.5 points per game. So just 0.1 point per game less than the Falcons. They're 30th. So, you know, this is also a defense that's giving up a lot of points, a lot of yards. I believe they're 30th in total yardage allowed. So they've been nowhere near the defense we expected. You know, and we talked about this with everything else. Things seem to be lining up as this is a vulnerable team. They're coming off a week where they were just in London. Everything's looking good. I just don't know why I can't feel confident about this game. Because everything seems to be lining up. The Falcons are sort of coming off one of their best games where they should have hung 40 points on, the Jets, if not for some fumbles. But I'm still nervous. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel. I feel like everything should be fine, right?
It really feels like Falcons fans don't believe they should have nice things, right? Yes, and then like exactly. If something's given to them, they're like, this doesn't belong to me. It's too pretty and shiny. I have to drop it and give it away. There's an instant sense of dread and panic. I understand there are feelings like that. It makes sense to me. And I get the guarded optimism that we're kind of sensing here. It all makes sense. I think everybody's made good points about that. I don't want to veer too far, Kev, off of what you were going to talk about, but I thought it was a kind of interesting day at Falcons practice because it was basically like rookies at the podium day.
Yeah.
Chris talked to Kyle Pitts. I talked to Richie Grant. Tori talked to Ade Ogundeji. It was a lot of these younger guys that are making these types of impacts, right? Pretty positive stuff. We even saw Grant get involved. And we are seeing these younger players get more involved. You guys mentioned Mayfield. I think that's another reason for this guarded optimism. And while I think Matt Ryan kind of got – he got killed on social media for saying we're going to be better in October and November over September. And Falcons fans were like, that means that you're going to suck, right? Like you're going to suck right now. The world's going to suck. Like the world's going to end. Okay. I think he was just trying to say that we're going to evolve. And I think the types of small progressions that we're seeing from these rookies, I think has been pretty impressive. Even if you look at Grant, he comes in, he's played nickel before. He was a functional, competent slot cornerback for a while. Darren Hall was too. Chris has a good piece on Kyle Pitts coming up tomorrow. Shameless plug number one. I think it was just really interesting to see these guys are mature. They get it. And whether they knew it before they became pros or they've been taught this, these guys are living in the moment. I actually asked Grant to go over his Jets tape, and he's like, I don't look backwards, right? That's kind of the mentality that they have. And I think that that's just as encouraging, I would say, as any of these other reasons for optimism, that these young guys are starting to get it. It's starting to click, maybe not superstar talent-wise, but we're starting to see good things. I mean, obviously, Pitts, he's
something else, man. Yeah,
he's something else. He's a special player, but it's been nice to see some of these other guys making these small contributions, and you can watch them get better.
Yeah, I agree, and I think the rookies coming and playing bigger roles is something that a lot of fans have been hoping to see, and we did see that last week. You know, a lot of guys were forced onto the field due to injuries. Richie Grant got to play meaningful defensive snaps for pretty much the first time this year. We got to see Darren Hall too. And I think they acquitted themselves well. Obviously it was against the Jets, but I mean, I don't think that the Jets had the worst ever offensive game or anything like that. So, they certainly mounted a furious comeback there and tried their best to close it out even if they couldn't. But, I think it's a big deal to see the rookies starting to make more contributions. And that goes from Kyle Pitts all the way down to Avery Williams, And I agree with what you said too, Scott, about the small incremental improvements, because I think that's what's going to be absolutely key. And I think the really good teams that end up being relevant in December, they don't play their best football in September. They play their best football in November and December. And that's exactly what happened to the 2016 Falcons. The 2016 Falcons didn't start out as this juggernaut. They were, we had the pitchforks out for Kyle Shanahan after a couple games that year before things started to turn around. And
remember that Bucs game.
Oh man, that was dark times.
And they were 4-3 after 7 weeks coming off a loss to the Chargers. So yeah, they didn't really hit their stride to halfway into the year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that sort of, I'm not saying this is 2016, but I think that sort of slow start. We're not saying that. I'm saying that sort of slow start where they start off, not playing where we think they should be, and then they slowly sort of improve and get a little bit better every week. And then if that continues, you get to the point where, oh, this team is like special. Like this team's becoming a juggernaut right before our eyes. And I'm still a ways off from thinking that's going to happen this year. But I think going from week 1 and 2, where this team was like getting blasted off the field against the Eagles and, playing a closer game to the Bucks, but just falling apart completely in the fourth quarter, to like, the narrow win against the Giants where they probably should have lost that game, but they pulled it together, won at the last second. And, that's always, you got to win those sometimes, those ugly games. to a game against Washington where they looked like the better team pretty much throughout and then blew it. And then finally against the Jets where they actually did look like the better team and then they didn't blow it. So, you know, this is all trending in the right direction. And honestly, I think I would prefer it to go like this for my head coach. You know, Arthur Smith starting 2-3, obviously not ideal. Dan Quinn was started 5-0, and you guys all remember what happened after that. I would rather start 2-3, play my best football later, than start 5-0 and then collapse. That's just my personal opinion. But I mean, obviously, you don't know when you go 5-0 that you're going to collapse, but that's what happened. So I'd rather not do that again. So at least now I'm not, you know, high on a 5-0 start to see everything crumble. I think they can only go up from here. You know, 2-3. They're certainly in the mix. You know, we haven't even talked about the picture of the NFC right now, and we're like a way, way, way far away from talking about how the playoffs are going to shake out. But there are so many teams that are like 2-3, 3-2, you know, in that sort of window of being just right around 500 that anything can happen. Like if the Falcons string together some wins, they're going to be right in the thick of things. And by the same token, they lose a bunch of games, they'll be out of it just as quickly. But you know, I think we've got a lot of football left to play, and I think I'm hoping that the Falcons' best football is ahead of them. This is where I'm at. But Eric, you're smiling. What is it?
Playoffs.
Playoffs. You talking playoffs?
Yeah. There's. I mean, it's fine to feel optimistic about this team, you know, given how they played, and to be quite honest with you, with the way that the season has shaped itself so far. They should be 4-1, to be honest with you. They should have beat Washington.
They definitely should have beat Washington.
They should have beat Washington. And looking at how Philly has played recently and how they still cannot get their, you know, get their offense on track. Like they should have how did they managed to give up 32 points.
Week one. Week one is always an anomaly.
It is.
The Bills lost in week one, and look at them since. So you have to take week one and throw it out, or else you're crowning someone for the Super Bowl that's going to end up like, you know, sub 500.
Yeah, like the Saints.
You know, I mean, so it's fine to be optimistic about them. I want fans to approach with a little caution here. You know, this isn't by any means, is it a Super Bowl juggernaut team, in my opinion? You know, I coming into the season, I felt like they were going to be a team that's kind of hovering around that 500 mark last couple weeks of the season, possibly being in the wild card talk maybe. But let's kind of hold our horses a little bit for playoffs. And when I say that, I'm staring directly at Adnan about this. So don't let a solid first half against Miami spark you into thinking like, man, this team can go on
be up 17-0 in the first half.
And they can win the division if they just do this.
All right, two points. One, I'm conceding the division. The Bucks are too good. The Bucks are incredible. I'm not even looking at the division. And two, I've already made a promise to the viewers that I will not talk playoffs until this team is above 500. Okay. So it will not be the first half against the Dolphins. However, when this team beats the Dolphins and when they beat the Panthers next week, I'm starting that conversation.
There we go. That's fair.
You see how he said that, right? Yeah. When they beat them. He didn't.
When, yeah. When that's confidence beat. Right there. Yeah. All so right. We know who to blame if things go south. It's Adnan.
As and the Braves are rolling right now. I am brimming with confidence.
Oh, great. Yeah, see, there we go. Now we know who to blame. That's he's at Say Which Way on Twitter, folks. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, go ahead.
Building on what Scott was pointing out earlier with the rookies, I think the other thing to look at when you're talking about the future of this team, because I think, you know, if you're looking, I'm looking at the 2021 season as what are they doing now to build for the long term? And not to say that they're not going to do anything and that they're out of the playoffs or anything of that sort, but this is a new regime and it's about what they're doing from a player development standpoint. I'm looking at these second year guys. Look at AJ Terrell. He is turning into a phenomenal corner. Jalen Hawkins, we may have found a starting safety for 2022 that we got in the fourth round last year. Matt Hennessy at center has really just solidified and you know, taken that spot. Like, these second year guys have really developed somewhat quickly. And, you know, I've said it before, a lot of these guys are functional rookies because they just did not have a normal 2020 season that many of these young guys have had this year. And that gives me a little bit more hope that we're seeing additional young guys getting snaps, becoming starters, becoming quality starters on top of all that. Not just our rookies, not just Kyle Pitts and Mayfield and the rest, but we're seeing these other young guys who are also going to be part of the future plans. So for me, you know, it's whether or not they win this next game or make it to the playoffs, and, you know, Adnan is driving us crazy with playoff predictions. I'm looking at the long-term outlook, and there are a lot of pieces that you can point to and say, hey, they're beginning to construct a roster here that's got some youth, that's got some players, and they're doing it the way you want to see it done. They're doing it by developing guys that they got in the draft. And that's one of the things I'm sort of hanging my hat on. So Scott said it, but I wanted to add on to that because I feel like these second-year guys are sort of getting overlooked by the fact that we have a lot of good rookies. But they're making a contribution. They're making it in a big way.
Yeah. And that's even more important considering, you know, the salary cap next year is slightly better than this year. They still got a lot of work to do on that. But, you know, they're going to need to have a lot of key contributors be on these rookie deals next year too. And they're going to need, you know, veterans, cheap veterans to step up. And they're, so far they've been able to cobble it together this year. And, you know, I know that Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot have said, you know, they're competing now. I've always sort of viewed this as more of like a stepping stone year. You know, we're not going to use the word rebuilding because, you know, I think they were very adamant that they didn't want to use that word, but maybe call it a stepping stone year where you're sort of stepping across the river to relevance. And this is like the first step on the path. And I think that they can certainly be sort of a frisky team this year. And a lot of that is going to come down. Yeah, I know you like that one, DW. Yeah. that one's for you. Yeah. I think that this will be a team that that is in the mix. And I think, honestly, as Falcons fans, I think if they're just in the mix, like late in the season for a change, that's all we really want. Like, I don't need them to go from like 4-12 to being like a juggernaut in 1 year. I mean, that would be great. Like, please do that. But, you know, I don't need it. If you could just not have a starting draft takes in October, that would be fantastic. And so far, it looks like we're going to make it without having to start doing mock drafts in October.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just refreshing even having this conversation, you know, whereas at this point last year, we were talking about, you know, could the Falcons potentially pick top three and what quarterback or what, like, you know, what wide receiver or what defensive player are we potentially looking at in the draft?
Yeah, I need to go back and look at like officially when I started putting draft prospects in the name of these shows.
What you're telling me is I should not submit my mock draft right now.
Not, I mean, you do you.
That also implies that you have one.
Oh, right. I'm sure he does. I have one. You know, I don't publish it. Just because I'm a degenerate.
They made one the day after the draft. Stop.
I have plenty. I'm already down to edition number 6. We're ready. Let's just roll them out.
I did want to say something before, just in case I don't want to get this in. But when we were having a discussion, when y'all were talking about Calvin Ridley earlier, I don't even, that kind of shocked me that someone even asked the question. Is he a wide receiver one? I don't really understand. And I know being what they mean when people say wide receiver one, I feel like they're kind of referencing, you know, obviously what you said, they like Julio or even like one of the top receivers in the league. But, you know, what he did last season, I think kind of proved with Julio in and out who he is. But, you know, I think, you know, guys have bad stretches and it's just, you know, started the season. And I think this Sunday, you know, banged up secondary. The secondary he went viral against in the summer. Good
That's
opportunity.
Right. That's how it started the whole he's the greatest route runner ever conversation was when he
exactly
dusted him in that.
So I'm not making any predictions here, but I think this Sunday he could show something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I certainly love Calvin Ridley, and I think he did show, like you said, last year with Julio out, that he had the capability to be the top guy to draw the top coverage and still get it done. And, you know, I think that he has done it thus far this year, you know, I think people are kind of putting the offense's struggles as a whole on him just because he's kind of the most, other than Matt Ryan, sort of the most obvious part of it. And it's always easy to sort of pin it on your top guys. Like whenever the Falcons offense was struggling, when Julio was here, it was, oh, what's wrong with Julio? You know, or what, you know, why isn't Julio playing more snaps or whatever? You know, it's never just one player's fault. So I do hope that, Ridley can show up and really, silence the doubt. You know, I think he's got a long way to go in terms of I don't even think we've seen the best of Calvin Ridley so far. I think he can still continue to grow as a player, and you know, I think people maybe underrate the mental side of the game. And I think it was clear that Ridley was struggling. And I just hope that he's able to deal with those issues, because that's no joke. You know, I hope that he's able to get his mind right. And get to a point where he can be the best player he can be, you know, the best version of himself. And I think we will see that this year. That's big for him and for the Falcons. So, all right, let me get in a few questions here before we start wrapping things up. First from TC Colorado with the $3. TC, thanks so much, man. He says, appreciate the great show and interesting takes. You're welcome, buddy. Thanks to everyone for coming on, everyone for watching. We also have George Costanza with another $3. He says, I need a link to where I can buy that drink. I need to try it. Hashtag sponsorship.
I actually found it on Amazon. I'll paste it in the chat.
Okay. Anand's going to hook you up there, George. And then finally, just in from Kevin Dog with the $2. Thank you, Kevin. Kevin's Unite, by the way. He says, I think we will win the division and make the playoffs. That's a bold prediction there. So he's got Adnan even beat with the prediction of division winning. I mean, the Bucks have looked a little bit
that more. That was Adnan with a different
name. Oh, yeah. I should have known. It's his burner. It's his burner. Yep.
I have many of those.
Yeah, Kevin, yeah, he does.
Kevin, don't do it.
What? The Bucks have looked a little mortal this year. They've still been a very good team.
Oh, Lord.
But, no. You know. Yep. Not saying that the Falcons are going to.
My favorite part of this podcast, just seeing his reaction just go like, no, completely like, yeah, totally. That's right. It's like, oh my gosh.
In fairness, if the Bucks lose a couple more,
you know, we can
have that conversation.
No.
It's going to get real spicy in here.
Jeez, imagine a whole playoff game at the Benz.
Hey guys, let's get a 2-game winning streak going, okay? Let's start there before you start talking winning divisions and beating the Bucks, and let's just get a 2-game winning streak going, okay?
And you know, I'm never picking us against the Saints either. Picking against us against the Saints either.
Of course,
we're gonna win that game too.
Yeah, yeah. So if we can win these next two games, you know, we'll be well above 500 after that. So, yeah. No, I mean, they definitely need to win some games here on this stretch. I think this is, like, it's funny because early in the season, it looked like a pretty daunting stretch. You know, I think the Panthers looked a lot better after 3 weeks, and now they look not as much better.
They look terrible.
Yeah, they look
terrible. Now that they're playing actual football teams, they suck. Like, they look awful.
Drop the hammer.
They're also bogged down in some trade rumors at the quarterback position. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's
also a big break that we're missing McCaffrey. Like, all jokes aside, that team is completely different with Christian McCaffrey, as any team would be with a player that talented.
Yep. Yeah, it's tough to lose someone that important to your offense. It's tough to my fantasy team, who took, you know, Christian McCaffrey first overall, you know, to be without him as well. So I know from personal experience just how big of a difference he can make for your team. No, but they are. I mean, McCaffrey is a special player, and it's honestly, it's really sad as just a lover of football to not see him on the field on Sundays. Like, it just, it's rough. You feel for him. And I hope we do get him back at some point.
I'm glad he got paid, though. You know, hamstringing that salary cap over there.
I'm just glad he got his money before the injury started piling up, because Lord knows you're not going to get paid after that. So good for him. Get your money, players. Get your money.
Six of a possible 21 games.
Over the last three, right?
Yeah.
It's rough, man. Big rough. All right. Final tip from George Costanza. He says, if we can get Bad Moon Rising on the show, what's the chances of getting Steve Bartkowski?
Evan's not here. That's
Evan's not here. That's a question for him. I'll, you know, Evan would say he would try, which I'm sure he would. So we'll see about that. I know we were in talks with another very special Falcons player, and that got delayed a little bit, but we may be able to another Falcons legend. So that
it's
may
Bobby
be coming
Petrino,
at some
guys.
He's just gonna leave a note on the Google Meet camera where it just says, "I'm sorry, you know, out of respect for you, I'm leaving you this note to say that I will not be attending your podcast this evening." So I would pay good money to see that note. But actually, no, didn't Keenan Forney show it to us? He showed us the actual note.
Did.
Yeah,
he did. He showed us the letter.
One of the legendary moments on this show. So
it sure did.
You guys are all over the timeline. Like, we're going back to 2007. We're skipping 2 weeks ahead to talk about the Panthers.
Well, that's what happens when we get over. Once we get over an hour, it's a free for all.
Yeah, we like keeping everyone on their toes. That's what
exactly,
it is.
Exactly. But we are over an hour, so we'll let you guys get out of here before I give our guests the opportunity to plug their stuff, because it was requested multiple times and it's in my contract. Just want to remind you guys, I'm going to plug my own stuff first, so please, you know, do like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. That really helps us out. You can check out the Patreon page for access to exclusive perks, including our patron Q&A sessions and some other cool stuff on there. The link to that is patreon.com/falcoholiclive, and you can check out our community Discord server as well, the link to which is in the show description. So, first of all, we have Scott Baer. He is at Scott Baer NFL. What is it? The managing editor of the Atlanta Falcons digital media, Scott? Is that the official title?
All these titles are so wacky, man.
I know, man.
Yeah, something like that.
He works there. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I feel like that's what I want on my business card. But I want you all to know that you should go to iTunes or Spotify or YouTube and subscribe to the Falcons Final Whistle podcast starring Chris Rim, Tori McIlhenny, and most importantly, me. And
not to toot your own horn or anything.
That stuff never happens. But yeah, man, subscribe, drop a 5-star rating on it. I mean, you won't be able to help yourself because it's just so much fun. But yeah, do that. And just something that I want to throw out there too, that we're starting to kind of build. It's like a Twitter Spaces kind of pregame show that Tori and I have been doing that we're going to get Chris on. He doesn't know it yet, it's like the pregame show before the pregame, right? That if you want to just wall to wall Falcons coverage, that's what you'll find at AtlantaFalcons.com.
Absolutely. Good stuff there. Definitely a big fan of everything you guys have been doing there, this season. Been a lot of fun. Enjoyed the content, and I have to check out the pod. I believe you guys started that somewhat recently, so I saw it pop up on my Spotify, so I'm going to have to check it out. It does sound like a good time with all those great folks. Speaking of those great folks, we have Chris Rim. He is at ChrisRim1 on the Twitters. Chris, anything that you would like to plug?
Nah, nothing else. I think Scott covered it all. Just go to AtlantaFalcons.com and read up, you know, follow what we're doing, listen to the podcast. Should have some fun stuff, great analysis on there, and I think we got some good stuff coming from our editorial team. So trying
Absolutely.
To produce some great content. So appreciate y'all having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Chris is criminally underfollowed on the Twitters, by the way. So you guys need to hit him up. Yeah. Gotta hit him up for sure.
Appreciate that, man.
Absolutely. And then we have with us Falcoholic DW on the Twitters, also known as David Walker in the real world. DW, anything else you'd like to plug other than the excellent Falcoholic podcast? You can also
No one calls me David Walker, actually.
I know. I know. I should just change it so it just says DW. Like, that should actually
That's how I talk to Scott about you, actually, just DW. This is the first time, so I always I'm like this guy, I like this guy on Twitter. I'm always telling Scott, I'm like, he's tweeting what I'm thinking right now.
Very angry.
That's our typical press box. Yeah, we're like looking at you, all of us are looking at your tweet and cracking up.
Especially when he talks about going back to the freezer for more vodka.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
I think yesterday you put it. I don't want to get us lost, but you put out a tweet and you were pouring yourself a shot. I lost it. I, you're like in the background, like, ugh.
Yeah, that's, definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's the puts content the people come for. Yeah, the
brand,
alcoholic
the
and alcoholic for sure.
The brain is very strong.
It's the alcoholic and alcoholic.
Yeah, this is what my family is very proud of.
Yes, greatest achievement.
We talk about this at Christmas. Oh, aren't you known for being an alcoholic on Twitter? That's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
I want that, on my tombstone. Yeah, exactly. That's a
yes,
good one.
The Final Whistle podcast. I mean, the Falcoholic podcast comes out almost daily. You'll get the post game with me and Evan, statistics that we dive into during the week after the game, and of course our previews. We'll have one coming out this week where we preview the matchup with the Dolphins, and got some interesting predictions for who I think are going to explode in this game. So this could be a fun one.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there, and definitely check out the Falcons final. I mean, the Falcoholic podcast as well. So there we go. I think that was the requested three.
Final
plugs,
whistle.
So final whistle. Excuse me.
Whistle.
Yeah. I think that was the three plugs that were requested. So I think we're good on that quota now.
Incidentally, I do want to say I do actually listen to the Final Whistle, and it's quality content.
Yes.
Yeah, we love to hear that.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I definitely need more Falcoholic podcasts and Final Whistle podcasts in my life. So excited to check that one out. Also with us tonight, we have, of course, Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way on Twitter. Adnan, anything that you're working on you'd like to plug?
Yeah, a couple of running series, both publishing on Saturday, Falcons series history against the Dolphins, and the What If the Falcons Win or Lose articles. Like I said, both coming out Saturday afternoon, so check that out.
Yeah, check that out for sure, guys. A lot of good content coming there. Finally, we have Eric Robinson. He is at ESPN. I'm sorry, _Eric_Robinson on the Twitters. Eric, anything that you're working on you'd like to plug?
Just be on the lookout at the end of the week for my Dolphins preview. Yeah, that's for the most part.
Eric, will we need ESPN Plus for that article?
We need to get it plugged in to the site.
Plus.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just a guy there, guys. I'm no one.
Okay. So they don't even like want you to do the ESPN plugs.
No, they don't. They don't want me to do it.
Oh, no. Sorry.
I take it back. They probably do. So
yeah, they probably do. It's probably in the contract
NFL,
somewhere.
NFL Live on ESPN or ESPN 2 Friday, 4 p.m.
Just in case they check. Yeah, here we are right on the show. Make sure we get the time.
Not even Dave watches the show. We're good.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Yeah, guys. Finally, I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. I've got a new series that'll be coming out every week. That's going to be my game picks and predictions for the week. So that'll be coming out on Thursdays before Thursday Night Football. And then I'll also have my stats preview, matchups to watch, all that good stuff. And of course, we will have Sunday's post-game show, the flagship program, coming to you immediately following the Falcons matchup with the Dolphins on Sunday. Until then, guys, we will see you on Sunday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in with us. I know a lot of people are watching the Braves, so thank you for having us on in the background or the foreground, depending on, you know, how much attention you're wanting to pay to that game. And like I said, thank you so much. We will see you this weekend. Have a great week. Enjoy baseball, basketball, everything else that's going on. And we will talk to you on Sunday, guys. For everyone here at the Falcoholic and for Scott and Chris, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Have a great night.